Hi, everybody. This is Mark Cheffredini. Thanks for coming back to the Ghost Seat Talk podcast experience. Man, oh man, oh man. We've got a dynamic do-it-yourself duo of directing capabilities, talents. These guys are skilled beyond belief. Get your brains ready because they are the conductors of the heady sci-fi steam train, and it's coming right into your frontal lobe.
If we're going to try to prove the supernatural, we're going to need some kind of visuals, or people won't believe it.
This city was designed according to this tablet. Maybe these gateways to other dimensions are actually all around us. We're not quite in dangerous, uncharted territory yet.
Benson and Moorhead, welcome to the show. How's things in your world?
So good, so good. We're in Los Angeles. It's super sunny and clear. It rained a couple days ago, so it's like particularly nice. I feel like David Lynch does a weather report here. So now when I talk about the weather, I feel like I'm copying David Lynch.
Everyone, have a great day. Whenever my boss sends me an email, I always try to check where it comes from. And I go, ordered by whom? Any Dune fans out there? So guys, let's start with the sort of grapefruit in the room, the fantastic friendly elephant. You dedicated this film to making movies with friends. You obviously have a friendship that goes way back. What is the best part about getting together and just weaving stories?
Man, that's great. Yeah, I'll say what one thing is that you know, sort of like the two characters in Something in the Dirt, where it's like, oh, when you remove the belief from what they're doing and you remove the damage it causes in their lives and the way they hurt each other, that like actually what they're doing is quite beautiful and intimate, of sharing ideas and theories that are pretty wild out there, the big mysteries of our human existence. I think telling stories with friends when you're working with them, that's what that is, and that's a very beautiful thing. But outside of, but beyond that, being in production, I just can't really imagine any world where being in production and you're not with your friends, it's going to be as pleasurable as it could be. Because the hours are just way too long. It's like to be not among your family and friends as much as you can be.
There's definitely no proven correlation between the difficulty to make a film and its quality. But there's a huge correlation between that and the quality of life that you get to have, and your desire to go back to set the next day, and your desire to keep making movies. It's funny, is like Something in the Dirt could have turned out very poorly, and I still would have been obscenely proud of it and happy that we did it, because it was so earnest that we were just getting our friends together and telling a story. So it doesn't, it very often makes work not feel like work. It feels like what you'd be doing anyways, like a hobby.
You're like the Beatles, you're just jamming. And on that note, Jimmy Laval, the album Leaf, has been with you guys through thick and thin. When it gets to a point in the creative process where you've worked comfortably enough together, how free does that allow the crew or your friends or even your parents to just be like, you know, I think you should try this, and, you know, let you open to different voices, different ideas?
It doesn't, because we fire them. it's honestly, I don't think anyone we've ever worked with has had a hard time saying they don't, but speaking up and having their voice very genuinely. And in the case of Jimmy Laval, that's actually a very specific case where it's like, growing up in San Diego, there's not very many people who make it in the entertainment business. And he was someone who I just knew from being a young person there, that there was this famous musician. And then I just so happened that I got a job shooting something he was doing. And then eventually Aaron and I started working with him a decade later. But it took a long time to get past the point of just being like he probably just could have railroaded me into anything and been like, I don't know, dude, you're Jimmy Laval, what the fuck am I gonna say?
Yeah.
Sorry. No, genuinely, if anything, it's the other way, where it's like, oh, you know, they say anything and you're like, yeah, it's probably a better idea. Yeah. That's but that's filmmaking, right? That's collaboration. You give your idea direction, and then hopefully that person is like, has an idea that you never thought of before. And that's usually when things go best.
It's so cool when everybody that you work with, you believe that they're a genius, and you fooled them into thinking that your ideas are okay too. And it just kind of works into a very, it's an honor to be able to work with people like Justin or Jimmy or our editor, Michael. It's just very nice to, the amount of mutual respect is so high that things like telling them they're wrong it's not a problem,
And actually we've been very lucky too, because Michael Felker is a good example of someone who, in our first movie Resolution, he was our production assistant straight out of film school. And then the next movie Spring, he's editing with us, and he's been editing with us ever since. And there's never been a time where he's hesitated to say, I think your idea is bad.
Oh, or, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, never. Very direct.
He's always been, yeah, like very direct, and always stood up to us. And we've been very, very lucky with him.
Fought with him. Yeah. Ever. Not a single fight. Just like no ego. Yeah.
Well, it's so funny too, because you think of the expression like, what is a camel? It's a horse designed by committee. Sometimes, yeah, if you have too many ideas, it's sort of like, weakens the saucer, so to speak. But I think that in most creative industries, the more times you can sort of gut check or, get a second pair of eyes or even give something a sleep test, it's going to be, more beneficial. So no, that's great. And I love that you two are so open to all these different best idea wins scenarios.
Yeah. Well, what's funny, I want to comment on that, because it's just one of those rare times where the metaphor falls apart rather quickly, just in very specific circumstances, where it's like, I couldn't co-direct with just anyone. I'm not like, everyone should co-direct. It's not that, and like, we wouldn't. Our third editor, Michael Felker, is like, he's a very specific person that we have worked with and made friends with. And so it's like, we're very collaborative people, but I also think that the recipe has to be perfect. The collaboration is not the thing that makes it good or bad. The ingredients are what makes it good or bad,
Sure.
We don't have... And all of us who work together continuously now, we have so few arguments, but there are things that are just as damaging as arguments that you're not going to work well together. Like, for example, like if you can't get past a certain conversation about something.
Oh my God. Yeah.
That'll be a,
just keep having the same meeting.
It'll just time, like film, so much of film, so much of the currency of making good film is time. But if you get stuck in a reoccurring conversation, you're going to spend that currency of time pretty quickly.
Yeah. And it also it indicates that you have a difference in taste and intuition and all of that, that maybe it's like, okay, maybe next time we don't do it this way. Because that it does feel like if you get down into the absolute minutiae of something, and it's like, oh, we're just kind of missing each other on a base level. So
one thing that is not missing from your stories is the inclusion of you two. I mean, there's the expression, when you're infamous, you're more than famous, you're infamous. When you're in cinema, you're actually in the movies. So like, you guys, you're front of camera, back of camera, under. And I imagine that when you're on screen saying the words that you've written and thought of together, there's nowhere to hide. So how do you lean on each other to be like, I don't know, are you feeling this? How do you play something on the day so that you know it's working?
Can I kick us off with a little? The what we're going to say is probably something to do with with the fact that we've actually just gotten more and more confident in building each other up over the years. But so our last film, Synchronic, we have an acquaintance who was very honest with us about his feelings. And he said, he goes, boys, normally my issue with your films is that they're just like too you, The problem with Synchronic is it's not enough you. to a small degree, this man was correct. And I think that like something like making something, and there's like, we're gonna make this us, with a huge asterisk on the fact that of course these characters are not us. Please take it away.
That's just good enough. No, it's good. And it's a good, I like that. that anecdote, because it's like also like it's really hard to criticize everything someone's ever done in one sentence.
Yeah.
but you're like, man.
Yeah, it's like, and also your personality.
Your personality and you personally.
You personally and all your movies.
By the way, I really like this person.
Yeah.
He's a great guy.
Yeah.
Well, watching you guys go back, I think one of my favorite scenes is when you're on the roof, where John and Levi are talking about things that are going on in their life, having trouble dating. And then there's a beautiful line that's very telling, where Levi says, "You don't understand it unless it's you," which is so telling. So are there things that you've gotten in your life that you feel comfortable sharing? Like, hey, Aaron, I know only you feel this way because it's you, or Justin, it, you know, like, I don't even know what I'm asking, but like, no, what?
I think I can answer this. First, I'm going to toss it to you in a sec, because I just want to say, I think it's very cool you think that's your favorite scene, because it is a scene that was very deliberately designed to be a bit of a reaction to overdevelopment of other projects, where we thought, we need to just sit down and talk about who we are as people. And it'll still push the relationship and plot forward, but it is a scene that is so designed to be our favorite thing, which is diving into people, not plot. And it's very cool, because there's a world where most of that scene can just be cut. Just on a logic level, you could still follow it without being a 5-minute scene. But it was also one of our favorite scenes to develop, because it's so character based. Anyways, the question, yeah.
yeah. Well, I mean, it's John's perversion of a bigger idea, because it's something that could be taken as being like, that was a beautiful thing to say, but it's obviously done in a way that's pretty offensive. But there is this thing attached to what he's saying that gets a little more specific, and that it's that like, there are truly things outside of the way John is affirming it in a very offensive way. There can truly be things that can just be personal to you, that are other, they might be, some people might seem supernatural or otherworldly or something along those lines. And those things can both be unverifiable and simultaneously completely true to you. And both things can be true simultaneously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if we've been talking about this a lot recently, but if you've ever had an event happen to you that shakes up your worldview, something supernatural, for example, and you're telling that story to somebody else, if they believe you, it should completely destroy their worldview too. If, for example, they are atheistic or materialist or anything like that. You know, if you say that, if they believe you, it should shake them up. But because it didn't happen to them, that it doesn't. There's just no way. Like if you told me a ghost story, I wouldn't think you're lying to me, and I wouldn't think that you are mistaken. It just wouldn't impact me, because it's not me. You just have to experience it. You have to understand it at a deep level.
Yeah,
which is weird. Cognitive dissonance is such a weird thing in humans, and evolutionarily advantageous,
the relatively like famous case of what the, it's in common UFO lore, but it's like that Harvard psychiatrist John Mack, where he basically said that he believes at a certain point he started believing all these people their abduction stories, but it was like he also kind of like poked at this thing where it's like he can simultaneously not personally believe in abductions and simultaneously believe these people had that experience.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not saying it was all in their heads or even that. He's just saying both things can be simultaneously true.
Yeah. And I think it also, it's something that requires a setting aside of the ego, because I think the way that you land on things like that is, I don't know what happened to you. You know, I can't explain it. I don't know. And I think it's really hard to admit to yourself you don't know, or to admit out loud that you don't know. But I think that that's, you know, him saying, I don't think you're lying. I don't know what actually happened to you. And that's it. And we have to just leave it.
Mm-hmm.
Did that answer your question? I know you were You're scratching at something, and I want
to. No, well, if we had an hour, I would love to do a deep dive into that. But I think that I tend to forget my own questions, so I'm just going to say that you answered it. So well done, guys. Well done. But I think actually, but more to that point quickly is that I think the whole purpose that I took away from the movie is that these guys are really trying to know each other and kind of know themselves. And I also love the end of the movie. Like supernatural, spiritual, sci-fi stuff is happening around them, and they just can't get over sort of basically like yo mama jokes. But that's it's belittling it. But like they're actually picking each other apart and letting each other know that the other person sees the other person, but they don't, you know, John and Levi don't want to acknowledge it. So I think that's very raw. And so I you know, kind of applaud you guys for going toe-to-toe doing that. But I think that that's only as strong a scene as it was because you guys know each other so well, and you kind of know maybe boundaries of what you're writing and what you can say on the day.
Well, that's a really interesting question. The truth is that John and Levi are so different than us in real life that it was less about our own personal boundaries on anything, and it was more about the intrigue for us of telling a story about two people who never quite become friends and how vicious that could potentially become. I think it was that. And then again, just feeling like we could, because no one would probably ever mistake. They were so different than us in real life that no one would probably mistake them as being actually us.
Okay.
So we could say those things to each other in a room, and it was completely as two different, so people so separate than ourselves that it didn't really matter to us personally. I think, unless you get offended.
I got pretty, oh my God. Yeah, when you called me a liar, you called me a liar, I was not into that, you know?
Well, I think maybe my, where I was going with that might've been a little shooting too high, but I think what I mean is that like maybe, if you choreograph it or related to maybe boxing or something like on a movie, you know, it's a dance you're doing. And I think you do that so well because you probably know each other well, even though it's not your character. So I get that that's not you guys taking each other down a peg, but I think just the toe-to-toe was very nice to watch. And I think that if you weren't good collaborators, you wouldn't have got that magic.
Let's talk about that, the development of that too, because this was really interesting, is there's a way to read that scene yelling at each other, you know, or an escalated yelling, you know, a total blowout, drag down, knockout, meltdown. You can see it on the page, you know. And when we arrived for rehearsal, Justin said, I think we can beat this. I think we can beat a climax that you would expect this kind of extreme you know, visual emotion and all that. And so he's like, let's just try this. We're actually just being like really methodical about taking each other apart and see how that goes. We tried it. We're like, that's actually really exciting. And there was a little bit of worry in my mind of like the movie feeling flatlined, you know, if it never, ever, ever hits a crescendo, but it actually totally does in just different ways, just not in that way and not in that scene. And so on the day, Justin's medium and his close-up was first, and I remember having such an awesome, like such a wonderful experience where we shot this in a rare way where we put the camera on a tripod so that we wouldn't have, and we made our blocking so we wouldn't move, so that I'm sorry, I just realized I have to, I'm oh, sorry, yeah, I'm yeah. rambling, but I have to explain, we are operating and the camera and rolling the focus on in this movie the whole time. There's no operator, there's no crew. So we were making it easy for ourselves to just perform and be in the scene. And
we've got two additional cameras.
Yeah, and we're holding cameras, you know. So we were like, okay, let's make this easy on ourselves and lock down the camera so we could just focus on the performance and that's it. And so Justin went first, and he did something different than in the rehearsal, and easily just described as like more emotional or something like that. It was just, I was picking at something. He wasn't just getting offended. I was like picking at his entire being, and landing, you know. And I realized that I had to step it up, basically, like what I was planning on doing. I had to to step up and go the other way of in this weird, cold, smirky kind of way that wasn't as honest, and it was much more destructive. And that was really exciting. And then I will finish this ramble with, you want to talk about the edit of the scene?
Oh gosh, I think I blocked it out because we were editing at nights while we were on another job that was 14-hour days.
Yeah.
but the editing in the scene was probably the trickiest thing was, first off, there were bits to cut because it was running, like everything runs a little long. It was figuring out what we could lose, and then also the cameras that Levi and John were holding was like trying to find the emotion of the operator in the moment and making sure it matched. And it was like, well, it's like, can you look at John's camera? It's like Levi's partially off camera in John's camera. How much off camera do we make it? How bold do we go with that? And with the camera Levi had, so much of it plays so close on John. And that felt like it was saying something, but beyond saying something, the aesthetic. So the camera's a camera called a Panasonic DVX100. For some reason, the close-ups on that camera still look spectacular besides it being 20 years old. Yeah. Nothing looks like a fully zoomed in close-up of the deep Panasonic DVX100. It looks so good.
Yeah. And luckily our third editor, Michael Felker, kind of swooped into the rescue, cracking that scene five different ways. Where I think it used to be a little bit more of a back and forth volley, and then we took it way too far one way, where it was essentially just John fully assaulting Levi, and Levi kind of not even putting up a defense. He just gets upset and that's it. And then where it landed, where it's kind of like he puts up a little bit of a defense, but it really just kind of shows John's true colors and Levi's true colors and then gets out of the scene. So, but there's a 3.5 hour long edit of this movie that you can see why we had to trim some stuff. But it's really exciting to think about and talk about and remember what used to be in there.
Another thing that's actually really interesting about this scene I just realized was part of the motivation for us creating the characters of John and Levi the way we did, their dynamic, their power struggle, was to make sure that we were essentially doing the opposite of the power struggle in a movie we did called The Endless.
Mm-hmm.
That is to say, in The Endless, Aaron's character was the one, the more submissive one, taking more of an emotional beating most of the time. In this case, it's the opposite. And this scene was probably the most, where it went the farthest in that direction,
mm-hmm.
where I was playing the more vulnerable one. It was interesting. It was super. It was very fulfilling and very fun. And I think we're both very proud of that scene.
Well, I am too, Justin. Aaron, so good to see you. So good to catch up with you. Everyone, check out Something in the Dirt now on VOD, or as William Shatner might say, there's something in the dirt. Something in the dirt. We'll catch you next time.